Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
My pleasure to introduce Sandy Alderson, the president of the New York Mets, to our show. This is really a privilege and a pleasure. We've had some great guests on the show before. We've had Rob Manfred. We've had Scott Boras. We've had GMs, managers, Dusty Baker, Dave Roberts. But Sandy Alderson is really a special, special guest. And not only because he's Sandy Alderson, but also the timing of this right now. He is the man of the hour, having just acquired Francisco Lindor. We all know Sandy Alderson, previously in charge of the San Diego Padres, and of course, the Oakland A's, the Bash Brother teams that won one World Series. I thought they might win more than one. They certainly had chances and were always there. So it is my pleasure to bring in Sandy Alderson. How are you doing, Sandy?
Doing very well, thanks. Just traveling from the spring training site, took a look at the new renovations that Mets put into place over the last couple of years. Place looks great.
Fantastic, fantastic. And we're going to get to Lindor, McCann, Carrasco, all that's going on with the Mets. First, I should ask you, you look great. How are you feeling? And why did you decide to take the plunge and come back?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm feeling very well and took the plunge really because of Steve Cohen and the opportunity to come back to the Mets and accomplish some things that we weren't able to finish over the course of my first tenure. And was very excited about the opportunity to come back with Steve.
Okay. Well, you know what I want to ask you, and I knew Steve Cohen was as a limited partner with the Mets, and I was around the team a lot over the last, you know, probably several decades, but you know, I didn't see him that much. Did you know him well going in? How did this come about? And also, now you're in charge of not only the baseball side, but the business side. Do you feel pressure? I mean, I know you have experience on the business side as well as the baseball side. San Diego, you were in charge of the business side as well. But is there extra pressure? We're talking about now you're working for a man who is a pretty successful businessman, reportedly with $15 billion. That, I would say, defines successful businessman. How does it feel working for him and being in charge of his business operations?
Well, look, we've had a really good relationship over the last year or so that I've known Steve. I have to tell you, based on COVID and some other things, we've only really met in person once. So to some extent, you know, this was a leap of faith on his part to name me to this position. It mostly came about through Andy Cohen, who's sort of Steve's right-hand person, his personal investor. And Andy is someone that I got to know through the minority ownership meetings that we had periodically with the Mets. You know, so far it's been great. I've had a great relationship. It's all long distance for the most part at this point. In terms of the business side, look, I'm not an expert. I was responsible for the business side for several years in Oakland, as well as during my time with San Diego. I'm not an expert on ticket sales and sponsorships and those kinds of things, but I kind of know what works and what doesn't. from a, you know, a somewhat higher level. But look, if the team is good, the business will follow. We need to make sure that the business is in as good a shape as the baseball side. And hopefully, even when the team's not doing well, from a business standpoint, we can still be successful. Steve is doing all the right things, making all the right investments, not just in players, but infrastructure on both sides of the organization. So I'm really excited. Plus, I'm a curious guy. I enjoy being involved in things that are somewhat new, and, you know, learning different aspects of what we're doing.
Well, you're pretty new there. I mean, it's to come back, you've been there about 3 months now, so you don't know everything about how it's going to operate, but you were with the Mets in the other regime for about 7 years, I think, maybe it was 8 years, but quite a long time. At one point, I know you had the payroll below $100 million for that, yes, Mets team, which is quite a low payroll for a big market team. You know, the fans are expecting an enormous payroll. Now, how has it been different for you? Obviously, you've added three pretty big acquisitions already, so we can see it's going to be a little different. I mean, is it completely night and day? How has it been for you so far?
Well, it's a little bit different in that, you know, I'm involved in more of the decision-making than I was before. I was pretty much limited to the baseball side previously. Resources are certainly different. You know, we took our payroll down to less than 100, you know, for financial reasons primarily. It was sort of the right thing to do, I felt, at the time. It's nice to have more latitude and as a result, more options in terms of not just player acquisition, but also infrastructure. You know, we've hired Jared Porter. We've hired Zach Scott. We're filling out our player development side. We're really rebuilding the R&D piece, the analytics piece. It's exciting, not just in terms of the players we acquire, but also the infrastructure that I think will be put in place that will allow us to continue to make, hopefully, good decisions.
Right. I mean, you've operated in mostly low revenue or small revenue or small spending markets and teams, basically, mostly for most of your career. Now, Oakland, obviously, you acquired so many good players that the payroll got up there at some point. But you started with Oakland, and you're kind of the originator of Moneyball, winning on a shoestring in Oakland, along with Billy Beane. And San Diego is small market. Of course, they're operating a little differently these days. Didn't operate that way then. And you operated differently, certainly with the Mets in the previous regime. But I want to ask you, big focus is on the luxury tax. You're getting close to it now. You know, obviously the Mets are way improved. You needed a catcher. You got a catcher. You added a rotation piece that's huge and arguably the best shortstop in the game, best veteran shortstop anyway. Where do you guys stand on the luxury tax? Do you expect to go over it?
Well, it's a decision we'll have to make. We're not close enough yet that it has had a significant impact on us. Getting Lindor and his salary together with Carlos Carrasco definitely moves the number up, you know, significantly. Look, the luxury tax is the luxury tax. And so we're aware of where that line is drawn. We haven't determined at this point whether we're going to be below it or under it. But, you know, just because we're a big market club doesn't mean that we don't have to make choices. And, you know, it's as important to have discipline with a big market club as it is with a small market club. In fact, it's more so because with a big market club, you have lots more options. There are things that, you know, with respect to a small market club, you don't even consider because they're just not possible. Here we have a larger menu of possibilities. But that doesn't mean you don't need to be disciplined, and it doesn't mean you don't have to make choices. So we'll see where, you know, the off season takes us. But obviously, the luxury tax is in the back of our minds.
Okay. Well, the biggest choice you've made so far was the Lindor acquisition. I think he is clearly one of the top 10 players in the game, arguably one of the top 5 players in the game. And it kind of went under the radar. So bad job by us. You kept that quiet very nicely.
That's new for the Mets, by the way.
Yeah, you're right. How did this start, and how did it progress, and how did you get to this point? I would have thought Cleveland would have wanted it. Dominic Smith, you know, you've got Alonso at first base, and Smith doesn't really have a spot with you guys right now. I don't know if you expected DH or not, but how did it come to be? You ended up trading two prospects along with two shortstops, so you gave up a decent haul. Not crazy. You didn't give up your top prospect. So
right.
I think everybody was pretty happy with it in New York. But how did it come to be?
Well, we started talking to Cleveland back really in November. The initial conversations were about players other than Lindor and Carrasco. Just, you know, kind of an opening conversation to talk about who might be available there and who might be available from us. At the time, I don't recall us even talking about Lindor or Carrasco. And then over time, it became clearer to us, just reading media reports and so forth, that Lindor might be available. There were some conversations about, you know, just a one-off with Lindor. There were conversations about a one-off with Carrasco. I mean, shortstop wasn't our most glaring weakness. So, but we definitely needed some pitching. And then we came back, you know, then we came back and asked about both. And, you know, it really came to a head about this time last week, like Monday of last week. And it got serious. And I think that was because, you know, some other clubs had also stepped up and they felt they needed to make a decision. You know, what's interesting is the trade market has worked at a little different pace than the free agent market. And I think that, you know, in some cases, clubs are afraid that a team like ours might go a free agent route. And so before that happens, you know, they engage. And unfortunately, the free agent market is pretty much paralyzed right now. So from our standpoint, you know, this worked out pretty well, but there's this trade-off, this tension between free agent market and player market, particularly in an environment where some clubs are looking to offload salary. It's essentially a supplement to the free agent market. So anyway, those things, you know, work differently at different paces. This came together at the right time for us. And so, you know, we're pleased with it.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, certainly one of the best players in the game. What, you know, I mean, you mentioned that shortstop really wasn't your glaring weakness. You know, I would have looked at, said maybe third base might be, and there are third basemen out there, obviously Arenado on the trade market and Bryant and Suarez. How closely did you look at that? Is third base still a possibility? If not, who would be your third baseman? Which way are you leaning right now? I mean, you've got a few guys who played there last year, but no one really established themselves as the starting third baseman. Can you envision yourself not acquiring a third baseman and going with what you have, or are you still looking at that?
Well, answer the question a little bit indirectly. I think right now, you know, we realize that we need to fill out our 25-man roster in terms of the bench. So if we work from the bench up, you know, we'll see where it takes us. But we're going to need some additional players, even if they're not starters. You know, right now our starter at third base is going to be J.D. Davis. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are, you know, other players available. You know, we have to measure those other players against – a guy like JD, not only in terms of ability, but also in terms of control and cost. So I don't know where we'll end up, but if we end up with JD at third base, I think we'll be fine with that.
Okay. So it sounds like you're pretty comfortable there. The other options are rather expensive as well. And you have other things going on too. I know.
Right.
Where does the center field situation stand now? I wouldn't have seen it as a glaring weakness, but We all know that you've been talking to George Springer, who's a free agent. People have suggested you're the favorite, or Toronto maybe. Is that still a possibility? I mean, obviously, it's a lot of money. I mean, my understanding is he's looking for something close to $175 million. You know, everybody can ask, of course. He's going to get a lot, though. He may not get $175 million, but it's a lot of money. Whatever he gets, it's going to be something in the nine figures. Is that still a possibility, you think?
Well, if you look at our roster right now, in terms of starters, guys that we'd like to put in the outfield, we really only have two. We need three, at least three. We need four, probably five. So, you know, without commenting on any specific free agent, we definitely have some work to do there. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're not overly left-handed. You know, there are other considerations as well. So, you know, we're still working on that. As far as, you know, a big time free agent is concerned, we'll just have to see, you know, where the market goes and what's available to us as we begin to, you know, address not only our needs, but also manage our payroll as it gets larger and larger.
Yeah, reading between the lines there, it sounds like you're not out on Springer and maybe others. Have you heard he's from Connecticut? Is there a sense out there that he'd like to be a Met, like to come to New York? You know, I just hear, you know, different things through the grapevine. I don't really know. He's not confiding in me, but have you heard that?
Well, look, you know, he's from Connecticut. I think, you know, given what's, you know, the level of excitement and enthusiasm surrounding the Mets, I don't think we've been crossed off his list. I don't know what his preferences are, but, you know, it seems to me that with respect to a lot of free agents, they want to make sure we're still on the list. And that's for tactical reasons as well as other reasons. So, you know, I would say that, you know, we're still engaged in a loose sense with Springer, as I would assume other clubs are as well.
Right. Okay. Very good. Obviously, Carrasco really helps the rotation.
Yeah.
And Stroman gives you another starter. That wasn't really your decision, though. That was left to the previous regime. Is that right? And also, are you still looking at the rotation, maybe for depth at least?
Well, the decision on Stroman was with the prior regime, although we were consulted. So I don't know that they would have extended the offer had we not agreed, but there was some consultation there, but ultimately it was their decision. You know, Carrasco really does lengthen us out a little bit, but we're still looking for pitching. I think Jared Porter the other day made it clear, you know, you never stop looking for pitching. So we're still looking, and you know, whether it's primarily for depth or somebody that can step right into the rotation, we'll just have to see what transpires.
Right. Now you've helped the pen, obviously. You've already signed a pitcher for the pen, very good pitcher, right-hander out of the Twins. I'm wondering, is Lugo is likely for the pen at this point, I think. And are you looking at any of the other marquee relievers that are still out there? We know that Hendricks just signed, but Hand is still out there. Melanson is still out there. Rosenthal. I mean, there's a pretty decent list of relievers out there. Is Diaz likely your closer, or are you still thinking about that? And is Lugo probably in the bullpen at this point?
Well, I don't know that Luis, our manager, has designated anybody the closer. I don't think that'll happen until much later, probably late in spring training. But and Lugo's situation, you know, is something that we'll have to determine. I would hope that we determine it going into spring training so that, you know, he can prepare accordingly. I do think, you know, we've improved the rotation. We've improved the bullpen. So I think now it's not a question of need so much as it is, okay, where does he best fit? Where is he of most value to the team? And I think that's a decision that we'll make. But look, if we were to sign another reliever, it might nudge him toward the starting rotation. If we were to sign another starter or two, maybe some that have options, you know, depth pieces, it might nudge them in the other direction. And again, we haven't really sat down and talked extensively with Louis Rojas or the pitching coach, Jeremy Hefner. But I think there's still sort of a split camp on Lugo. He's been a starting pitcher. He's been a good one for periods of time. But he's also done very well in the bullpen. So, you know, as far as our bullpen's concerned, we're very right-handed. It's funny. We're very left-handed on the position player side. We're very right-handed on the bullpen side. And so that's something we need to keep in the back of our minds as well.
Right. And you added Trevor May. His name escaped me as I was discussing it before.
Yeah.
Very good pitcher. Did a great job last year, last couple of years with the Twins. I want to ask you about the catching situation. A lot of people thought you would look at Realmuto pretty carefully, and you ended up signing McCann, who's been really good the last couple of years with the White Sox. In fact, he was great last year, both offensively and defensively. What happened there with Realmuto exactly? It seemed like, you know, none of the biggest free agents have signed yet. So I guess it's not shocking as we look back on it, but some of us were surprised that it wasn't Realmuto for the Mets. What happened?
Nothing really happened. I don't think Realmuto was ready to make a decision at the time we were ready to make a decision. So, and look, every choice has its consequences. Let's say hypothetically we had signed Realmuto instead of McCann. Would we still have been actively engaged with Lindor and Carrasco? I don't know. So, you know, I think that you got to look at the totality of the situation and the fact that we chose to go another direction behind the plate may have put us in the right posture to be able to do Lindor Carrasco. But, you know, this is not a continuum. It's just kind of a linear. You got to make decisions from time to time and recognize the implications of those decisions. But, you know, by signing McCann, we got a very good player and we maintained some flexibility, which allowed us to engage with Cleveland. Engaging with Cleveland and getting Lindor and Carrasco limits perhaps other options, but leaves other options available. I mean, from our standpoint, one of the important things over the last 3 or 4 weeks of the offseason upcoming is to be in a position to take advantage of some opportunities. Again, like we have at the beginning of the offseason, the middle of the offseason, we want to be in a position to take advantage of some things at the end of the off season as well, but we don't want to leave everything to the end. So anyway, this is how we've chosen to approach it. And we're happy with the results so far.
Sure. It's been great so far for the Mets. Did you make an offer for Realmuto? And just to take a big picture macro look at the free agency, what do you think is going on there at the top of the market? It seems like Springer is a little further along than some of the other guys because he has two teams that are, at least that we know about, that are kind of in the mix. These other players don't really have teams connected to them yet at this point. It just seems like we're far away from getting the answers, yet we're only probably a little more than a month from spring training. So what do you think is going on there? And did you take a shot at Realmuto? I mean, I guess you gave him some idea where you stood before moving on.
I don't think there was any ambiguity at the time. Here's what I think is going on. I think there are two factors that are affecting things. One is industry economics. And look, we can argue about, you know, increases in franchise value versus, you know, profit or loss in a particular season. The bottom line is that there was a significant impact on the game economically, and we're working through that right now. I think something that's just as important here is the uncertainty surrounding the 2021 season. Are we going to play all of our games? Are we going to have, you know, fans in the stands? What impact is that going to have on, you know, ongoing economics? I think we're all comfortable that it's going to be better than last year, that we're probably not going to play 60 games, but who knows what's going to happen. And I think this is hurting the players because given the economic circumstances, there aren't a lot of clubs that are out there being aggressive in the marketplace. But it's easy to be less aggressive if nothing's happening because of the uncertainty. So I think this uncertainty and the fact that there's been no resolution between the players and MLB on exactly what will happen is freezing the market. And so I don't want to point fingers, but I don't think this is good for players. And maybe it's good for clubs, but I definitely don't think this situation is good for players. At some point, the Players Association probably needs to recognize that. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's been good for teams, at least the Mets, the White Sox, the Padres, and the Royals have taken advantage. And the other 26 teams, to varying degrees, have kind of sat on the sidelines. So
that's what I mean.
Yeah, you've kind of taken advantage of it. By the way, I think part of the uncertainty, the bigger issue is the economics, obviously. But do you have any feel on the DH? I mean, you're impacted by that.
I don't have any feel for it at all. No.
Are you going to hold on to Dom Smith? Because you might need him. You might need
Dom's
a DH.
Dom's not going anywhere.
Okay. He's good. He's can hit. He's quite a good. But can he play the outfield? What's your feeling?
Well, look, it's not ideal. I get that. We'll just have to wait and see what happens with the DH. But look, we're not going to be a perfect team. There aren't that many that ever have been perfect. And so we'll do what we have to do. We like his offense, obviously. And we're going to hope we're better defensively, particularly with Lindor, up the middle at shortstop. We still have the possibility of addressing center field. But, Dom's going to be on the team. And hopefully he doesn't have to play left field. But if he does, he does.
Yeah, he can hit. And he's a great guy for the team as well. He's a terrific individual. Speaking of the economics, I'm naive. I do think the teams were hurt badly. And I do think the teams lost money last year in the pandemic. So did the players, obviously. The players only got 37.5% of their salary. So it was a big hit for the players. But I do believe the teams lost money. The rumors were, as Steve Cohen and others were bidding for the team, that the Mets lost $150 million or something like that, or have lost consistently huge bucks over the last several years. Is that right? Could they have lost $150 million?
No, I don't know what their financial position was last year. I mean, obviously they were motivated to sell. That probably had something to do with the economics and the losses, but I don't know what the number was.
Okay. Thor, people are very interested in Thor. Obviously a guy that you acquired, terrific talent. When is he going to be back, and what are your expectations for Noah Syndergaard?
Well, right now, I expect him to be back in the, the June timeframe. Now that could change, it could move up, it could move back. That was the last projection that I saw based on, when he had the surgery and how the rehab was going. We expect him when he comes back to be pretty good, whether he, is good as a fourth starter in a rotation at the outset or something better than that, who knows? I think the bigger question is, how many innings he can throw. I mean, one of the nice things about coming back in June, even though we'd like to have him back earlier, is that the inning situation, the limitation may not present itself just because he will have started the season later in the calendar.
Yeah, and your division, obviously Miami surprised teams last year. The Nats are making moves. They were the world champion only 2 years ago. The Braves are really good, the division champion the last couple of years. Where do you think the Mets stack up? Right now, people are saying the Mets are right up there near the top. Where do you feel, and do you feel like you're You said you weren't one player away. You've acquired three good players now. Are you close to one player away?
Or closer.
Fair enough.
Look, it's a tough division. It's going to be very competitive. We think we're competitive. I hesitate to, prognosticate beyond that. That's for you and others in the media, presumably, to do. But, we're getting there. We're getting closer.
Okay. And when Steve Cohn came in, that introductory press conference, which was so well received, he's really done a great job with everything. It's particularly public relations, but certainly acquiring players. You've been a big part of that. He had suggested, like, to win the World Series in 3 to 5 years. I think he'd like to be a good team.
Me too.
He'd like to be a consistently good team. It's probably hard to say win the World Series, but what do you think about that?
Oh, look, it's a laudable goal. If we do things right, I think that, we got to the World Series during my last tenure with the Mets, and it was the fifth year, with, as you pointed out, along the way, payrolls under $100 million. So, 3 to 5 years, World Series, I think that's unreasonable to ask. Certainly been done before. There's a certain amount of luck associated with that. But if we, if we continue to make measured decisions, have some discipline, build out our infrastructure, are smart about the contracts that we take on, I think we have a chance to emulate some of the more successful franchises in the game, because one of the things we want to be able to do is sustain excellence, which we weren't able to do before. And I think part of that was my fault, but part of it was, I think, a lack of infrastructure as well, which, again, doesn't relate directly to just how wealthy the owner is.
Right. You mentioned you're more involved in the decision-making now, and I know you are with the business side as well, but you feel like you have more say in the baseball end of things as well? I mean, I know it's early in the game, but do you have carte blanche to decide at this point? And is that different?
Look, I wouldn't say anybody has carte blanche, probably not true anywhere in the game. At some point, certain decisions are of such magnitude that they have to be reviewed and approved by an owner. But I do think that on the baseball side, again, particularly with infrastructure, we have a little more latitude, and I'm trying to promote that. And so far, Steve's been very sympathetic to what we're trying to build.
Very good. And before I let you go, I want to ask you, now you are 73 years old. You're a young 73. You're in great shape. You came back. It's a little surprising to some that you decided to come back, but you're obviously all in and you're working 24 hours a day. Do you have a time frame in mind of how long you want to keep doing this, particularly both jobs?
No, I don't have a time frame. Look, I told you at the outset, I've met Steve once in person. There was a leap of faith there. We're still getting to know one another. And that's not just through conversation, but, through decisions we make, things that he does, et cetera. We'll see how it goes. So far, it's been great. And, I'm confident that will continue.
Okay, I'm going to throw you one wild card question that you probably aren't expecting, and that is the Hall of Fame vote. Is there anybody, you've been in this game since the early 80s, came in, were a lawyer in the Bay Area, you came in running the A's. So you've been around 40 years at this point.
Yeah.
How are we doing on our Hall of Fame vote? Have we left somebody? Have we missed some obvious guys that should be in the Hall of Fame? Is there anybody in your mind that you've seen over the last 40 years? You say, why isn't this guy in the Hall of Fame? I saw him play. He's clearly a Hall of Famer. Or would you say, the writers may be doing okay at this point?
Yeah. So, I think the writers, for the most part, get it right. I think that, in recent years, so I've been on two Hall of Fame review committees, you know, for those who didn't get voted in by the media. And I think that to some extent, those weren't oversights, but I think that players are viewed a little bit differently today than they have been 20 or 30 years ago. And so I think that there's a different perspective on their performance that might be coming into play. But no, I think the media pretty much gets it right. And what I enjoy about the Hall of Fame vote is the debate that takes place, you know, beforehand, in terms of vetting, you know, vetting various people, and the more recent phenomenon of writers actually revealing how they voted and take, you know, being accountable for how they voted, which I think is good for the process. You know, guys slip through the crack. And so when those committees are formed and reviewed, there's typically somebody that gets in. I'm not sure I agree with all of those selectees who, you know, have been put in by committee, but that's what committees are, you know, differences of opinion and ultimately majority rules. But I've really enjoyed those assignments. And I know the people on those committees take it very seriously, but bottom line, I think the media does a pretty good job.
Well, thank you. Who may I ask, do you recall who got in on the committees that you were part of, who was added as a Hall of Famer?
Alan Trammell, Ted Simmons.
Was Jack Morris in there?
Marvin Miller, Jack Morris. I don't know, that might cover it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like those picks. I voted for Trammell and Morris, so I like those picks.
Good job. There you go.
It's been a real privilege and a pleasure to interview Sandy Alderson, Mets president, who's obviously the man of the hour, certainly in New York, and also baseball, and probably a Hall of Famer at some point himself. So it's been my pleasure, and thank you very much, Sandy.
Hey, I've enjoyed it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.